Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is attorney Elizabeth F. Schwartz. Schwartz received her law degree from the University of Miami and has been in practice for over 20 years. She is one of the nation's best-known advocates for the legal rights of the LGBT community. She served as counsel on the case challenging Florida's marriage ban brought by the Center for Lesbian Rights. She recently published an important new book called Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay or Otherwise. It was published in September 2016 by the New Press. And I'm speaking to Elizabeth Schwartz by phone from her office in Florida. Okay, well, Elizabeth Schwartz, welcome to Out of Bounds. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tish.
But before we talk about your book, I'm always curious about what it was that prompted somebody to get into a career. What got you into the career of law?
Well, I was a young activist doing lots of nailing wire hangers to trees, saying this is not a surgical instrument, and lots of protesting on my college green and stuff like that. And then I kind of woke up a couple, like a year after college, and I was at Jazz Fest in New Orleans, and I had been working at Princeton Review teaching SAT verbal, and sort of realized when someone asked a group of us together, they said, who's likely to be president in this group? And everybody looked at me and they said, oh, Liz Schwartz, for sure. You know, she's political and argumentative and she would do it. And I thought, gosh, you know, one of the best ways to affect social change is actually kind of changing our laws, working within the system. So I got enrolled in my Princeton Review's LSAT class and promptly took the LSAT and applied to University of Miami Law School with my title of my law school admission essay was Know Thine Enemy. And I got in anyway. And so that was what it was. It was just the idea of being able to try to affect social change sort of within the system rather than what no disrespect to protest, and it's super important, and I hope we'll talk more about that. But for me, it was how can I help people sort of from within the system? And I did manage in my career to work on some important stuff in our legal system here in the state of Florida, marriage, adoption, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I think that's a great way to express yourself. Now, let's talk about the decision that legitimized gay marriage. It came down from the Supreme Court in June 2015. But tell us a little bit about how difficult it was for LGBT couples through the years prior to this gay marriage decision. People might forget what obstacles were put in place for gay couples.
Well, it's hard to sum that up, right? There are so many obstacles. Marriage comes with some 1,500 rights and responsibilities. So we could go through everything from the inability to have legal rights to our children, to the inability to inherit from our partners, to the inability to get appropriate settlements upon the relationship dissolving, to the inability to be by our partners at our bedside, to the inability to inherit, to receive Social Security survivor benefits or retirement benefits, the inability to bury your partner. There has long seemed to be this argument on the side of folks who are against marriage equality to say, oh, you can get all these rights with estate planning and contract documents. And, of course, that's not true.
Absolutely.
There are many, many things that I go through and before I do that are only rights that you could get with marriage, automatic rights on death, divorce, like that.
I know. I think a lot of people probably didn't know that. But okay, so people started to petition to be able to marry their same-sex spouse, and that caused a huge backlash. Tell us a little bit about the obstacle of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, that stopped so much in its tracks.
Well, we think of DOMA as a denial of marriage act, right? It's hardly defending marriage when you're not letting loving, committed couples enter into it. But yes, that's one of those great euphemisms of the Republican Party. The DOMA was tremendously effective in getting all of the states in the country to sign on to their own DOMAs. So the federal government said, for federal law, for purposes of federal law, a marriage can only be a man and a woman. And then every state said, well, we're going to follow suit as well. And pass their own bans or some version of that. And so, of course, that was made our job so much more difficult because, as you may recall, after the Windsor decision in 2013, which overturned the federal ban against same-sex marriage, you know, we still had so federal rights are some like 1,138 rights associated with marriage. There are still some 400 or 500 rights on the state level that we needed to contend with, and so not only did we have to worry about all of these state bans taking down these state bans, but we had to negotiate the various rights and responsibilities even on a federal level, because some federal benefits are based on, you know, that your marriage is legal where you entered into it versus mm-hmm. that your marriage is legal where you live. So lots of folks were like, yay, you know, after the Windsor decision, like, yay, I live in a place with no state marriage ban, so I have all the federal rights. And then others were like us in Florida, we had a state marriage ban, so we could get some federal rights, but not all federal rights. You know, just a couple examples. So, like immigration law. Immigration looks at the validity of your marriage, and they decide, okay, if your marriage is valid where you entered into it. So my wife and I got married in Vermont. Our marriage was valid in Vermont. So we would be considered married for immigration purposes. However, for Social Security purposes, Social Security looks at your state where you live. So we were not legally married on a federal level for Social Security purposes because we lived in a non-recognition state. So it was really confusing.
Oh, yeah.
We were, of course, very, very happy when the Obergefell decision came down, which then was the final nail in the coffin for all of the statewide bans. And I go through a little bit of the history and at the beginning of Before I Do, just so folks understand kind of how we got here. But that was a great sigh of relief once federal and state bans were all taken down so we could get back to the rest of the hard work that we need to do as a community.
Yeah, and I thought that was really notable that you actually worked on the legal team in Florida to try to overturn some of these bans. That must have been a heady and exciting and frustrating time for you.
It was. It really was. And you know, I'm a Florida native, so for me, it really meant a lot that we didn't have to wait for the Supreme Court in Obergefell in June 2015 to tell us to take down our ban. We took down our ban ourselves in January 2015. We were the 36th state to declare our marriage ban unconstitutional. And it doesn't sound like the biggest deal when you look back, 6 months difference, whatever. But there's something emotional about having your own judiciary say, yeah, no, this isn't fair, versus being told by the Supreme Court that you got to follow suit. So it was a challenging and scary and difficult time, but certainly a wonderful opportunity to really recognize how loved and supported our community is by so many more people in the state of Florida than we thought. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the remarkable things that we really learned in this whole battle was how popular opinion has so much shifted towards support for the LGBT community that it's really sort of amazing.
I think so too, and you know, some of it perhaps is because more people were coming out of the closet and people started realizing their neighbors, their doctors, their teachers, you know, all these people were LGBT people, and I think that might have changed some hearts and minds.
I think so. Whenever I give talks to people and they say gay or straight, and they say like, what can I do? Kind of the first thing I say is come out, mm-hmm. come out. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, come out to everyone all the time. You know, come out to your dry cleaner, to your bank teller, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes you're that first LGBT person that somebody's ever met, and it just helps dispel kind of myths. And then I tell straight people, sort of come out about your support for the LGBT community. You know, don't stand for homophobic jokes when you hear them, stuff like that. You know, that's how change happens. It's just when people get to know folks who are in their lives, who feel a certain way, it helps sort of dispel the prejudice, because of course prejudice comes from ignorance
and fear.
Lack of exposure,
yeah.
And fear, exactly, fear.
Fear,
yeah.
Yeah. You know what, I'm actually from California and I lived in San Francisco for a long time, and you talk about this in your book, that there were a lot of LGBT couples who ended up adopting you know, one would adopt the other so that they could have legal protections. That is so amazing to me that now they have to think about dissolving that, of course. They might not think of that. Or they'll get charged with incest.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I know, right? I mean, we're very lucky that, as I say, sort of public opinion, I think, has really shifted so much. So I've gone into court a few times with a couple where we've got to, you know, undo their adoption so that they can get married. And I just had to tell the judges, you know, straight up, like, here's what they did. And here's what they want to do now. And the judges were very like, okay, awesome, congratulations. You know, like, they did what they did at the time. It seemed like it made sense. I mean, I always told people, like, adoptions are irrevocable. I mean, I can't claim that I thought we'll ever get the right to marry, but mm-hmm. I definitely told people, like, this is not a good idea. But, of course, they're plenty of folks who did it way back in the day, whether it was estate planning concerns, whatever it was, and we were handed those cases and had to deal with them. So it's each state is different, each state law is different. So I very much encourage any of your listeners who are in this situation to make sure that they get local counsel to undo that adoption in whatever way. There's various different state sort of methods to do so, but don't just think that you could go get married to somebody who is your legal parent or child or whatever. So, yeah.
Now we all want somebody to adopt us from a European country so that we can have legal status outside of the
U.S. Exactly. Give me an EU passport. Get me out of here.
Elizabeth, to tell us, now that the LGBT community has permission to marry from the state, are there still pending issues that need to be resolving that are you know, imminent right now? Tell us what some of the obstacles still might be.
Oh yeah. Well, gosh, there do seem to be quite a few challenges still on the parents' front. So just to give you kind of a brief background about what this issue is. So a couple, let's say you and your husband have a child in the context of your marriage. You know, your husband's put on the birth certificate. Let's say you and your husband are separated and you have a boyfriend and you have an affair or whatever, and the boyfriend is the biological father of the child that you have. Your husband is still put on the birth certificate because in most states, because there is this thing called a marital presumption. And that means that anybody who has a child in the context of a marriage is presumed to be, you know, that the spouses are presumed to be the parents of the child. So the challenge that we've had in some states has been courts who don't want to grant the marital presumption to a same-sex couple. And so we're very much concerned that couples button up their parental rights with a what we call a confirmatory adoption, a second parent adoption, or a step parent adoption, you know, if you're married, because what we don't want to have happen is just people having a birth certificate, because you might be able to get on the birth certificate, but let's say you go travel to, let's say you're on the birth certificate with your spouse for your child, but then you travel to another state where, you know, they might, and then you break up, and the judge is like, oh, well, you just have a birth certificate, but you don't have a court order. Too bad for you, or another country, right, where the country doesn't recognize your marriage, and you've got that problem as well. So that's something that we're struggling with, getting folks to understand how very important it is to just button up those parental rights so that on death or divorce of maybe that initial biological parent, there's no question as to who the legal parents are. And then, you know, we're also, of course, dealing with issues around, your question was specifically around sort of what marriage issues we're still kind of struggling with. We keep seeing these cases crop up of transgender folks who are married, and then their spouse says, "Oh, I didn't know you were trans, and I don't want you to have any parental rights to our kid, or our marriage is void, and you don't get any money," or nonsense like that. So one of the points that I make in my book, as painful as it is to even type this, much less have to do it in real life, we suggest to transgender folks that if you're getting married, you really want to make sure that your spouse acknowledges in writing that he or she knows that you are trans.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Elizabeth F. Schwartz. She's an attorney, and we're talking about her book, Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay or Otherwise. So do you want to continue that thought in regard to transgender couples having to acknowledge that they know that someone's transgender? So people get into divorce situations where they're so angry that they'll deny that they knew it, and that's how they try to get out of it.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I mean, it's stuff that just makes no sense and also is so toxic for children. I mean, it's unbelievable to me the arguments that people will make in a divorce. I mean, you're a parent. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So that's another issue that we see coming up a lot. And then I guess, you know, the other thing that I would say is just sort of generally with respect to divorce, you know, we're really very challenged with our couples, you know, more so than heterosexual couples. You know, people say, oh, isn't divorce? Well, I mean, on some level it is, but there are lots of different wrinkles that come up for same-sex couples. I'll give you just one example, and there are many. But many of our couples, many same-sex couples, only got married when they were legally able to, and for many of them that was decades into their relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while family law varies state to state, there certainly is the general rule that when there's equitable distribution or your property is divided up at divorce, it's based on the length of your marriage. When there's spousal support and alimony awarded at the end of your marriage, it's based on the length of that marriage. So we've got lots of couples who've been together for a long, long time, and they are not able to have a fair divorce because they... You know, they were only married for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. So you imagine how challenging that is for let's say the guy who's been handling all of the domestic aspects and not out there working because they had an arrangement, just like many heterosexual couples have, where okay, I'll go out and earn and you'll stay home, and even if it's not raise kids, you know, pay the bills and manage the whole house and all of that. So we've gotten just tons of cases that are really heartbreaking where folks just don't have the rights that they would have because they weren't legally married as long as they would have been if they could have been.
Wow, that is amazing, because I know for heterosexual couples, I believe it's 10 years you have to have been married in order to collect Social Security, for instance, right?
So yeah, they like say that. Yes, 10 years for Social Security, yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of people don't know that longevity has something to do with it. Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, because it's in the news, let's talk a little bit more about immigration status for the gay spouse of an American citizen, say. To tell us about that. It's got to be in fluid motion at this moment, right?
It is. And it's funny because, well, it's not funny, it's tragic, but it's interesting that you bring this point up, because this is one of the questions that I've been getting that has been so sort of painful to even think about. You know, many people have been asking, well, you know, should we hurry and get married, and is Trump gonna, you know, undo our marriages or whatever? And certainly I get the anxiety around that, you know, for everyone. I mean, this is a scary, scary time, but we really don't anticipate that there is any reasonable way that marriage equality could be rolled back at all. And I've told people, like, look, you don't need to hurry and get married. I mean, if you were thinking of getting married anyway, you know, do it responsibly. If you weren't thinking about getting married, this is not a call to hurry and do so. You don't need to do that. However, I do think that for people who are in a relationship with a person who's undocumented, binational couples where there's any immigration aspect at all, I do think that those individuals should be thinking about getting married, certainly should familiarize themselves with the issues raised in my book around automatic rights on death and divorce. But that is the one I've been mostly telling people, like, don't freak out, it's going to be okay,
mm-hmm.
unless you are a person, you know, a dreamer or someone who could be rounded up in this ridiculous pool of deportations that's happening right now. So those are people that I do think should consider getting married. You know, I would definitely have prenuptial counseling, make sure that you've got your ducks in a row in that regard, no matter what, as I always tell all marrying couples. But yeah, that is the scary.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too.
Right now.
As I was reading your book, I thought, oh my gosh, she's probably going to have to add a new chapter to this. Now, American citizens can still what we call sponsor an alien spouse, right? I mean, that's still in the books.
So yes,
that hasn't changed, and it's the same for gay and straight couples, right?
That's right.
So
that's right. Although I will add this because I so appreciate the point you sort of obliquely raised there, which is that it's the same for gay and straight couples, but I do think that to the extent that same-sex couples can afford it, it's a really good idea to have an attorney go with you to that interview, the immigration interview. A lot of people think, oh, it's so straightforward, I don't need a lawyer. But I don't do immigration law, but I keep hearing stories about kind of inappropriate questions that same-sex couples are getting, a presumption that there's some kind of trying to game the system or something. So I do strongly recommend that people have an attorney with them, especially if they're a same-sex couple, that you have an attorney with you when you go to that immigration interview, because they are pulling some shenanigans in terms of the sort of questions that they're asking, kind of inappropriate questions, and you just want to make sure that you have someone there to advocate for you. I think that when there's a lawyer there, so I'm told from people who really practice in this area, they really mess with you far less.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You talked about it in your book about, how some people will try to marry somebody from a foreign country just so that they can get their green card and it's not a real marriage. And then they ask questions like, what kind of toothpaste does your spouse use? Do they still do stuff like that? Is that still something that they do?
They really do. They really do, and it's so funny because I had a couple who came in, and they're a British couple. These lesbians have been together. Well, one's British, and then the other is an American citizen. They've been together for 35 years, kind of going back and forth and back and forth. And they were telling me about their immigration interview. They came to my office to do their estate planning afterwards, and they were telling me about it. And it was. They said, and then they asked about the toothpaste they use or whatever, and all these questions. And I went over and I was telling my wife, I said, thank God we're both citizens, because I think I would get deported if they asked me. I don't know all these things. What toothpaste does she use? Well, you know what? We have different bathrooms, and she buys whatever toothpaste is on sale at the particular moment. So,
exactly.
These questions are so ridiculous, really. But gay or straight, the immigration system is, whenever I learn these crazy things about immigration law, I'm like, thank God I don't do immigration law, because it's just nuts.
Well, I guess the bottom line that you would recommend is that people go with a lawyer no matter what, as a witness, if nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. These things can get really sensitive, and the stakes are high. So you may be tempted to save a couple dollars, but I would strongly recommend going with an attorney. Like I say, I wouldn't have necessarily thought that, but I've been told this by people who've been on the front lines, and does seem like you want to walk in there with representation for sure.
Yeah, I remember a lot of LGBT activists and stuff in my communities that I've been in. They scoffed at the idea of marriage. They said it's going to ruin the freedom and the spirit of being gay.
Yes.
It's going to ruin our whole aura in some way. So, well, what are your thoughts about that? Has the community been, domesticated by the state, so to speak?
Thank you for asking that question. I wrote so much about that in my book, and I wanted to do more, but my editor kept trying to scale me back. But I feel so strongly that this is a voice in our community that I wanted to make sure came out, forgive the pun, that for many people, marriage is this sort of succumbing to this bourgeois notion that of monogamy and
conformity,
all the trappings, all the trappings that come with the concept of this establishment, and I wanted to really honor that as a reason to consider not getting married for a lot of people. And I, as I say, I covered that in many different ways, in many different chapters. So I very appreciate Tissue raising this point. It really upsets me that now that gay people can marry, there's this assumption that we will, and that if we don't, then it must be because we don't love each other or we're not committed. But for many people, marriage is not the answer, and for many reasons. I love that I managed to squeeze into my book. My editor kept trying to take it out, but I managed to squeeze it into my book, the lovely quote by John Waters, the filmmaker, where he talks about, I think it was in the context of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal for LGBT people serving openly in the military. And he sort of wondered aloud, I think it was like in The New Yorker, saying, LGBT, like, God, I thought the whole point of being gay was that we didn't have to get married and serve in the military. You know, and he says, yeah. I think the growth industries are going to be tattoo removal and gay divorce. So he said back in like 2007, which was very, very prescient of him. But that's, I have a whole chapter called Do You, I Do, or Don't You? Mm-hmm. And it's all about reasons why you might choose not to get married. And this is a big piece. Of course, there are other more practical reasons why perhaps marriage might not work for you. Your taxes might go up. You might not be so pleased with the automatic rights that your spouse would get on death or divorce. You might get government benefits like SSI, Social Security, Supplemental Security Income from Social Security or Medicaid, Medicare. Premiums might go up. You know, there are lots of potential downsides from a financial perspective, but I also really honor the voice of many in our community who are like, this is not something that we have to do. And certainly many of those voices are feminist voices saying, hello, the history of marriage is it's a really a patriarchal institution. And, you know, maybe we could try to kind of do something different with the institution and make it more available to more constellations of families, right? Not everybody is a two spouse,
two-person configuration.
Right? Right? Many people are all different other kinds of family structures, and certainly we see very much in Miami lots of intergenerational families and other kinds of families where, you know, gosh, if they have to, you have to have a marriage to provide health insurance through work or, you know, all these other kinds of benefits. Mm-hmm, how about just rethinking those benefits?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Elizabeth, we're almost out of time. Just on an ending note, are you happy that you got married?
Absolutely, uh-huh. I am. Thank you for asking. It's funny because as I might have indicated my passion with that last question, I was really kind of on the fence about marriage. But you know, my wife had quit her job as a journalist and was writing fiction and feeling guilty about that. And I wanted her to know that I was really behind that decision, that I was investing in her fiction career. And somehow the marriage actually did kind of convey that to her in a way that all of my words didn't. Mm. I'm really happy that our parents for whom marriage was really important, particularly my dad and her mom, both of whom have since passed away, that they got to see us marry. So I'm glad we had the option, and I'm also glad to have thought through it carefully, and I hope others will as well, because it's a big, big deal. So look before you leap.
Yeah, yeah. Can you give us some contact information that people might be able to get in touch with you, find your book?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. My website is elizabethschwartz.com. You can email me through that, liz@elizabethschwartz.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter, I'm at Schwartz Outlaw, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z, Outlaw.
Great. Well, Elizabeth Schwartz, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great talking to you. Again, the book is called Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay or Otherwise, by Elizabeth F. Schwartz. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, and thanks for all the great work you've done for our communities.
Thank you, Tish. Really appreciate it.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.